All right, it is that time. Your weekly dose of common sense. This happens to be Friday, December 13th. That is Friday the 13th, and not that there's any bad luck here.
I figured that out this morning going, oh, no.
Yeah, oh, no.
Slow
there
down.
There ain't no bad in. Luck at Channel 511 no. Studio C. We are coming at you with your weekly dose of common sense. What does that mean? That means it's Common Sense Ohio. You can check us out at commonsenseohioshow.com. If you've got comments, if you've got questions, if you've got stuff you want us to cover, if you think you can hang with Norm at the roundtable even, just go ahead and leave us a remark, leave us a comment, send us a question. If you want to be a guest and you think you got the chops, that's easy. We've had guests before. We'll have guests again. In fact, we like guests because we like to have common sense discussions. We had Mark Patinkin last week, a great author, great book. Yeah. And he gave us a very nice compliment off the air. But it was a compliment because he recognized what we were trying to do. And there can be no greater compliment than that. We are trying to have open common sense discussions without judgment here at the roundtable. That's what we did with him, and he appreciated it. So we appreciated his input, obviously. But that's what the goal is. So send us just reach out. Where if you got something to talk about, you want us to talk about, we'll do it. I guess we'll just jump right into it. This day in history, even though it is Friday the 13th, there were a lot of candidates for this day in history. One was like the origin of the trial by jury in Plymouth.
Wow.
Interesting.
Oh, really?
Yeah, interesting. But I'm not going to go into that history because I chose another one, the Battle of Fredericksburg, 1862. And why? Well, because there was a guy named Ambrose Burnside took over for McClellan after Lincoln and McClellan had a little bit of a spat because we had the Confederacy on the run a bit. McClellan backed off, didn't pursue for one reason or another. Lincoln was, I think, getting a little bit of grief at that point. We were sort of the doldrums of the war. He wanted some results. So he brings in Burnside, who maybe gets a little bit too aggressive in Fredericksburg and loses miserably, like almost 12,000-13,000 men to Lee. And basically it was like 101 battle stuff. Lee had the high ground and fortified positions and just basically slaughtered us, or slaughtered the North. They were all us. That's what's interesting.
Right.
But after that, Burnside gets relieved. He says, Lincoln, you either got to relieve all those who were under me who screwed this up, or I quit. And Lincoln said, well, bye-bye. And this is why Fredericksburg battle won the day, for us anyway, here at Channel 511 Studio C, Common Sense Ohio. It's because Burnside is shipped over to Cincinnati, where he takes over the Department of Ohio, which is basically all the troops and resources in this part of the country, the Midwest, above the Ohio River, including like Indiana, Ohio, I think maybe Michigan or Pennsylvania. But so that is, we link it back to Ohio. And if you are wearing sideburns today, it is because of Burnside. So there you go. We'll grow your winter sideburns. I'm sure your wives will love it.
He had very dramatic sideburns.
Obnoxious.
They were mutton chops.
Yeah.
I mean, they were
absolutely
really
obnoxious.
Thank God they aren't called mutton chops and they went with sideburns. Jeez.
Yeah.
You know, the thing is about McClellan is, there was so much bad blood between him and Lincoln. McClellan was the Democratic candidate when Lincoln ran for re-election.
Ran for re-election against Lincoln. Now, interestingly, he ran for election for the Dems, but didn't quite, like, he was still sort of allied with Lincoln's side of things politically. I think he was just pissed at Lincoln.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ran against him.
Being relieved.
Yeah.
He was kind of like, his philosophy, if I remember my military history, was kind of like Bernard Montgomery, where he wanted to stockpile men and materiel ad nauseum. Like, it went on for months, almost a year. And Lincoln's like, you're not doing anything. Like you're just sitting. And he's like, well, I don't have enough for a decisive victory. And I think in the Battle of Fredericksburg, he had amassed so much that by the time Burnside took over, the North had like a 2-to-1 advantage, and they still got their asses handed.
Yeah, they got their, and there was some, I didn't go into detail about how they exactly lost, but there were some orders issued about creating bridges and some other structure to deal with I think, a mud mess. The battlefield was all muddy, and they needed to get across a river, and they couldn't do it.
Yeah.
And that didn't happen fast enough, and that's why Burnside later complains it was all the people under him.
Yeah.
Obviously, as maybe as Ohio State is figuring out right now, it's always the guy in charge who gets the blame. And for rightfully so, right? If things aren't getting done, then or they're not done in time, Burnside basically said, damn the torpedoes, we're going to go attack anyway. Wanted to attack the next day.
Yeah.
On the 14th.
Yeah.
And was stopped, you know, didn't do it after all because they would have been another slaughter. And I, there was some quote I read, something like not even a chicken would have survived or something.
Wow.
Because they had the South had fortified positions on a hill that, you know, undercover. I mean, we couldn't have won the way it was set up, I guess.
Wow.
So,
yeah.
And throwing just men and supplies at it wasn't good enough.
Yeah. There's some kind of formula that you have to have like three times, like to assure a victory generally. I think it is, the formula is, if somebody is an entrenched defensive position, you need like three times the number of men. It's amazing how a defense can be so hardened if it's done right.
When done correctly. Yeah.
And you're going to have to go up a hill or something, and it's just going to take a lot more offense than defense.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and without getting into too much, and without getting into the weeds of World War II history, this was one of the criticisms, or sort of the looking back criticisms, that the American philosophy was attack, 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 no matter what.
Hey, diddle, diddle up the middle.
Yeah, just keep going, throwing men, throwing supplies, throwing resources at it. And maybe strategically it wasn't the wisest choice looking back on it.
A lot of that in the Japanese theater with the U.S. Marine Corps, where they would just, like, you know, hey, guys, just, you know, for bravura, you know, like, you're just going to charge up a hill. And it's like,
yeah, why do that?
What, like, why not go around and flank them? No, right up the middle.
Yeah. And the Germans would say, the Germans sort of scoffed at the Americans at the time, I think, because they were saying, well, we could do better. Like, they have all these resources, all these men, all this equipment, all these supplies, all this fuel.
Yeah.
If we only had that, we were far better soldiers.
Yeah.
And maybe there's some of that's true, but some of it's based on necessity. We didn't need it, you know.
Steve, that's a good one, because I know we're getting off a little bit, but one of the best quotes after the Battle of Britain, you know, the Germans lost to the British in the air war over London, and Goering asked his general of fighters, Adolf Galland, well, what the hell do you need to beat the British? And he said, give me Spitfires.
Yeah,
exactly. Like, yeah, like, you know, give me the good stuff.
Well, ironically, Japan said the opposite about the Americans. Like, at Midway, the comment was something to the effect that these are brave men. We're lucky they don't have our planes.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
We're lucky their planes are crappy.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So anyway, well, we digress.
Good
into the news we go. News with Norm, both national, world, and Ohio news. What do we got today?
Well, a lot going on in Ohio. But first, a couple national things that I think, you know, we should dispense with. You know, the whole topic of immigration and the Trump immigration policies coming in with what they're calling the border czar, Tom Homan. And then the other big thing that I think is super hot are the Biden pardons yesterday, 1,500 clemency pardons. Most of them, from what I understand, were at-home jailed people that during COVID, they kind of didn't want, you know, to avoid the spread of COVID. The idea was, let's not pack the prisons. So a lot of people were sentenced to home confinement, and apparently these 1,500 are mainly those kinds of people where whatever process Biden set up, he's like pardoning those, I think, which is fine. I think he's setting up, though, some additional pardons of his own family members besides Hunter, like his brother, who was involved in that bribery, structure that Hunter set up. And Liz Cheney and Adam Kinzinger, two Republicans that were on the January 6th committee, where they destroyed the records of that committee.
Mm.
And that's against,
can't do that.
That's against the National Archives laws where so the incoming people like Jim Jordan that want to look at J6 records, they can't look at it. They're gone. Mm.
That kind of crap, you know. Infection sort of thrives in the darkness, and when you start destroying documents, hiding your government conduct. I mean, these people, they really do think they're above the law. And now they realize that there's a regime change. They're not so quite above the law.
Yeah.
And somebody's going to come back and look. So Biden's covering the backside. Look, I'm not saying Cheney. I'm not saying anybody did anything wrong. All I'm saying is it stinks when people start destroying records in the government.
Yeah.
It stinks.
And you would think if J6...
It's like the missing Nixon tapes, you know.
Well,
you know?
You would think if that committee felt like it had a solid position, that they would preserve all those records.
That's right.
All the interviews. Yeah. Like, why would they... You know, unless they knew it was bullshit.
Yeah, and the excuse, which I don't think they've said, that, well, we didn't know better. That's not an excuse.
Oh, come on.
Yeah,
yeah,
look,
yeah, I've not heard that, but I'm just saying if they default to that, that's not a reason.
Well, like Hillary's excuse. Well, I didn't know. Yeah. I heard Bill talking about possibly pardoning Hillary.
Yes.
So did you watch this interview?
Yes. And like, Fauci's another one.
She didn't do anything wrong anyway, and he's, you know, and blah, 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 blah. But it might be nice if she were pardoned.
Preemptive.
Preemptive.
Like, she didn't do anything wrong. Look, I don't know what was on the mystery email server. I do know that it was the subject of some investigation and she destroyed the evidence. So look, that is something wrong. That is something.
30,000 emails, they say it was.
That is something wrong. Yeah. And he says, well, they've deemed none of those to be classified, which sort of demands the next question. How do you know if they're destroyed?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
How do you know, Bill? If they're destroyed, how do we know that they weren't classified? So, look, and again, I'm not saying they were. I'm not saying they weren't. I'm just saying when you start destroying things, it reeks. It's got the appearance of impropriety, as we say in the law, and that's why in Ohio, for instance, tampering with evidence means destroying evidence that you know or likely would be focus of an investigation. So,
right.
You know, if you're... if you've got a gun that was used in a crime and you throw it away and you know that the police are investigating the crime, even if you didn't commit the crime, that's tampering with evidence. And that's in Ohio, that's a felony. The third degree carries a maximum possible sentence of 5 years. You know, it's got some teeth.
It's got some teeth, yeah.
Like Luigi Mangione, like, you know, the guy who assassinated the United Healthcare guy. So if he chucked his pistol in the lake at Central Park.
That's right.
Yeah.
Here's a great story. I'll tell a war story. Mm-hmm. Since I'm a criminal defense lawyer, I represented a guy charged with murder. He was a self-defense case. He was surrounded by three guys at a bar. And the guys had tire irons and chains, whatever else you might grab out of the trunk of your car. My guy had a little tiny pocket knife about 2 inches long. So a fight ensues. My client is, let's just say he grew up on a rough part of town, knew how to take care of himself in a fight. Jabs out at one of the assailants, catches him between the ribs, pierces his pericardial sac in his heart, and he goes into something called pericardial tamponade, stops his heart, and he dies. Runs home, my client does, and hands the bloody knife to his father, who says, and then promptly passes out on the couch, my client, because he was drunk. The father thinks, oh, crap, I'm going to get rid of this knife.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Goes and throws it over the tracks, never to be found again. The police are later called and they start investigating and it's determined that the father, I don't know if he admitted it or something, what the evidence of that was, but it was later proven that the father, threw the knife away. I go to trial. Father's charged with tampering with evidence. My client's charged with murder. Jeez. I get an acquittal. My client's found not guilty because it was self-defense and this will lead to Penny probably. And the father is convicted and goes to prison on tampering with evidence for getting rid of the knife.
Wow.
So that shows you even there was an investigation of a crime. The crime itself was later vindicated, or my client was acquitted of the crime. Father still gets convicted of tampering with evidence.
Holy dang. Crap!
So that shows you it's not
an insignificant thing right. to get rid of evidence.
Well, and it's not the value necessarily of the evidence; it's the fact that it's investigative. Yeah. It's a subject of an investigation, and you're tampering with it.
And to review, what Hillary did is she had official emails on an official State Department server. Fine, that was all preserved. But then she had a separate private server so she could do other emails off the record, and it was in Utah or somewhere, mm-hmm. and it was non-secured, and I think the DOJ or the FBI determined it had been hacked by some foreign, and Hillary destroyed that server with bleach block or something. Right,
like it wasn't just destroyed.
And hammers.
It was absolutely wiped, destroyed, completely removed from the face of the earth.
With physical hammers.
With hammers, with resources. So, and then, so think about that. And I don't know what the practice is of government officials, but think about how your own practice is. Does anybody have their own private email server?
No, of course not. Not unless you're running an enterprise. You know, but the thing is about all that, when Trump came into office after defeating Hillary, knowing that she did all this.
Screaming lock her up and all the nonsense.
He was magnanimous. He did not want his DOJ to prosecute
her. He said no, right? So look, this is a very telling point that everybody has made this big stink about how they should go run because Trump is going to weaponize the DOJ. When he could have, he didn't.
Yeah.
Now, whether he will or not, I don't know.
All this retribution talk, he didn't do it the first term.
No, he didn't do it. So look, Biden's going to try to make sure he can't. But I would suggest that the more Biden tries to cover this stuff up with pardons and whatever else, the more people are going to look into it.
Well, you said something last week that by pardoning Hunter, for example, it takes away his ability to say, well, I'm not going to comment because I might incriminate myself.
Yeah, right. He no longer has a Fifth Amendment privilege against self-incrimination, at least on these federal cases. So because he's been immunized, he's been pardoned. Now, that may change. So if there's a state investigation, if I'm advising Hunter Biden and he's placed under oath, I'll sort of backtrack a little bit on what I said last week. I might tell Hunter Biden, you can still take the Fifth, Hunter, because you still could be subject to a state prosecution, and that might give him a little bit of cover. So I don't know. But if he takes that approach, then he may well get charged in some state court. I don't know.
Yeah, I never thought of that. Right, yeah.
Because, old Sleepy Joe can't fix that.
Well, on the immigration front, I think this is interesting. So Mayor Adams and now Illinois Governor Pritzker have both reached out. Adams and Homan met yesterday, I believe. They have reached out to Trump's incoming border czar, and they want some help with the illegal immigrant situation, like in Chicago, which I think is going to be that's going to be ground zero. I think Homan has said the first city where they're going to try to go in and relieve this pressure on the local community. You know, resources are being used up by illegal immigrants is in Chicago.
Yeah. I mean, it would be interesting to see how that works. Now, along those lines, this might be an outrage thing later. I don't know, but I'll bring it up now. I saw a story where the Biden folks are now dismantling the wall and selling it off.
I saw that.
Quickly. Really?
Right. So just so it sets Trump back a little bit on the border crossings.
Who came in and they took the W's off the keyboards?
Yeah, right. That kind of thing.
When George W. came, what was it? You know,
it's
just stupid little stuff.
It's vandalism.
Yeah.
It's vandalism.
Well, dismantling the wall and selling it's more than that.
Yeah,
it is.
It's to frustrate his policies.
It's indicative. Well, not only to frustrate his policies, but to advance your own, which is an answer they have yet to give because it's lies. When you ask them, why are you letting people come over the border? We're not, they say. It's not. We're stopping it. Or the Republicans are doing it.
Yeah.
And this is, at the same time, behind the scenes,
if it is true, and I think it is true, that
they're dismantling the wall and selling it, they are still advancing their agenda to let people cross the border illegally.
Right up to January 20.
All I would ask is why? What's the agenda?
Yeah. Now, did you hear what the lieutenant governor of Texas said? So Dan Patrick spoke on behalf of the administration of Texas, and they said, we have $1 billion to buy those girders and that wall material. So it's going to go up for auction. And Texas, the state of Texas, is set to buy it.
That's awesome.
And then he said, what we'll do, we'll buy it and we'll give it to the federal government. We will just get, because it's going to protect Texas more than anything.
Right, right.
We will buy it. If it takes $1 billion, we'll be the top bidder and we'll just turn it right back over to DHS. I mean, but yes, I did hear that, Steve. That's crazy.
Which is, you know, again, what's the agenda?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And if you can't tell us what the agenda is, what are you hiding?
Exactly.
It's sort of like the tampering. It's like, what are you hiding? What's the fear here by destroying records?
And now that the election is well settled, the New York Times came out this week with a big story. Now, I mean, you got to love the timing. And they said that the influx of immigrants is the largest in U.S. history. It has It has outpaced the Irish immigration and the Italian immigration.
Over a two or three year period, wasn't it? Saw that as well.
It's yeah.
Like, and the number was astounding.
Yeah, it's jaw-dropping. Yeah, and you're just like, oh, wow, thank you, New York Times. Now, you're a little late to the party.
Yeah.
You know, now the American voters are getting the facts from America's supposedly leading newspaper, you know, and it's like, you're a little late to the party, guys.
Yeah.
Ohio's got a bunch of stuff, guys. So do you want me to just blow through this and then you guys pick up on what you think?
Let's do it.
Okay, because I got like six things they're one-liners. So Jane Timken looks like she is going to be Governor DeWine's pick to replace Vance. She's a rhino. The other thing
that I was going to say that she...
You want me to stop after each one?
No, I was going to say we kind of talked about her before, didn't we?
Yeah.
He veiled a reference to her.
She is Ohio's representative to the RNC.
Right.
So
right,
she is embedded.
Right. So because she ran for office before?
Yes.
Okay. So I thought.
Against Vance.
That's right.
So the question is going to become within the party, the Republican Party, is there going to be a push to start primarying some of these people? So if she is truly a rhino and she's not on board with this agenda that, look, like it or don't like it, whatever side you're taking on it, you know, there's a certain push that is gaining momentum.
Yeah.
And
look at Bernie, look at Vance. The last two senators elected are pretty hardcore.
Yeah. And we may end up with primaries on some of these. So I don't know how the Republican Party is ultimately going to land, but you can just see this brewing now.
Yeah.
With particularly if she's now in the Senate and she's not on board with the agenda,
she's not in it yet, but if DeWine picks her.
That's what I mean. Yeah. But if she's not on board with the agenda, it's really close.
Yeah. If she turns into a Susan Collins or a Lisa Murkowski, it'll be a disaster.
Right. You know, we shall see in 2 years what really happens.
Or right.
When's she up for that? Would be a
she would have to, because his appointment ability is only good enough till the next even year. So if she got appointed, or anybody who gets appointed, her or LaRose or whoever, Matt Dolan, whoever DeWine picks has to stand for election in 2026, and then Vance's original reelection date is 2028. So whoever he picks, if they want to continue, has to stand for election twice. The next like 3.5 years.
Right. And I don't think Ohio's DeWine is DeWine, but I don't. It doesn't seem like the voters are going to be behind something like that either.
Yeah.
So we'll see. We'll see.
Mm. Yeah.
I almost thought DeWine might appoint himself, and he could. Because he was a U.S. He was a U.S. senator before, but he's elderly now. I don't think he wants to do this.
He could hold both jobs.
He'd
have to resign.
And then Houston would become governor.
Yeah, I can't see him resigning.
I
can't see him do that. I think he just wants to retire. He's done as governor.
He goes off into the
sunset as governor. Yeah.
I wonder what he's worth.
No doubt, especially after selling Springfield to the Haitians.
Yeah.
There was a bill introduced, probably not going anywhere, but it is a funny bill, to make it a fifth-degree felony to plant a flag on the 50-yard line at a high school.
I saw it. The guy up in Toledo, who's a Michigan fan, by the way. So this is like a little, little jab.
Yeah. I saw that, and I know then the joking begins, like it doesn't have a chance in hell to go through, but it's just like... Do we have other things we could talk? I mean, it's you know,
well, look,
amphibian, for example, we need to vote on it.
And the melee that happened after that incident needs to be addressed. NCAA needs to do something about that.
Well, that $100,000 fine to each team, which was bullshit.
That's bullshit.
That's a traffic violation. That's
exactly.
Right.
I mean, to me, I would hold every athlete accountable in that you have a yellow flag.
Well, look.
You know what I mean? For the next game. Make it hurt.
This is coaching. I got to tell you.
I agree.
I forget what we talked about last week.
No, you're right.
We were talking about. We were talking about the U.S. Supreme Court argument on the Tennessee law banning transgender surgery or whatever.
Okay.
And, you know, it's like it doesn't, that law, like the founders never would have contemplated that. And, you know, so on the one hand, you think, all right, I totally agree that we shouldn't be cutting the genitals off our children At the same time, I'm worried about government intervention into parental decisions about their children's stuff like that.
Yeah.
But you would never think in a million years culturally we would be at that spot where exactly. we would need a law like that. So yeah. it's like this double-edged sword. This is sort of similar. You know, yeah. the NCAA, I was talking to my son about it, who's a student up at Bowling Green, and he's a huge Ohio State fan. He goes, yeah, you know, the flag planting, you know, something should happen. Like you said, maybe some – and I said too, maybe the NCAA will ban that. Then I talked to a buddy of mine up in Michigan and he said, look, for 12 years when we were getting slaughtered by our rival, Michigan State, they always did this stuff. They planted a flag. And his response was, go win the damn game.
Yeah,
And that is a response to it as well, too. You yeah. lost the game.
Yeah.
It just is what it is.
That same but weekend, who's Dabo Sweeney coach for? The
Clemson.
Clemson. Mm-hmm. So there was an incident with a flag planting.
Several.
At
right.
that,
right.
Yeah.
So my point of all of this is a long-winded way of saying it's like parent your kids at home, folks. You know, this is coaching.
Yeah.
Ryan Day should never have allowed that. And
no.
it's not like he said, go fight.
Well, he's standing around like, but what's going on?
In a
it's
day.
Endemic. It's, like, yeah. it's indicative. Ryan. It's indicative of his lack of control over that yeah. team or his lack of leadership over that team. And look, I don't know Ryan Day and I don't know what's going on,
yeah.
but
yeah.
When that happens, it's sort of like yeah. we just talked about it. The general's at fault on this.
I
and
agree with you.
If those kids thought yeah. it was okay to go out and do that on either side,
yeah.
on either side, it's because the coaches are either passively or actively permitting it. And I say actively in the side of the Michigan coach who was making jokes about it at a basketball game or something,
really?
You know, making a motion like wow. a flag mm-hmm. planting.
Wow.
So look, yeah. he's encouraging it. And,
yeah.
and fair enough, you're going to do that. It's going to create this kind of controversy. And now we're going to have rules out of the NCAA, which we all think are stupid. Why do we need a rule that says kids aren't allowed to go fight on the field?
Yeah.
Because kids aren't allowed to go fight on the damn field.
Exactly.
Right. And it's like, do we have to tell the really, really tell the coaches to get control of these kids?
Yeah.
yeah.
Or lucky, stress kids.
Well, lucky that there was nobody injured from that whole fight.
Easily
well,
could have been.
Weren't there the police officers slightly hurt? I thought
I don't know.
I think three of the sheriffs yeah. got slightly
which makes
hurt.
Sense. They're not uniformed up
because they were
they don't have a helmet.
Exactly.
Well, yeah, they're trying to separate.
Exactly. I didn't hear that.
And they deployed some pepper spray.
They did that, which again was controversial because like only Michigan players got sprayed apparently. Which
well,
is like
they
okay,
tried to display everybody, but
whatever.
It blows back into Michigan
whatever.
Players' face. Look, you won the game, Michigan. Great job.
Yeah.
Awesome.
I have
yeah.
a joke. So the pepper spray does work. Better on burrowing mammoths
than on trees.
Right. Yeah, on right. weasels.
Yeah,
on
weasels. Yeah.
Or whatever those yeah. things are.
Well, look, yeah. it's worthy of discussing upcoming on the 21st. We take on Tennessee in the
wow.
horseshoe. Ohio State plays yeah. Tennessee
wow.
In the first round of the inaugural year of the 12-team college football playoff. It's going to be cold.
That'll be a game, man.
It's going to wow. be at night. And I think for those, I've got friends in various parts of the country, and I get the same question as Ryan Day, what's going on down there?
Yeah.
And even earlier this year, and even last year, I was saying, look, Ryan Day is on the chopping blocks.
I would think.
And that was last year, and now yeah. he really is. And I don't even know if he survives if the team wins the national championship at this point. That's, you know,
yeah.
you've got.
Four in a row yeah. losing to Michigan.
Yeah, you can't do that.
I don't know.
Yeah.
How you,
but then you look at his overall record. You look at it differently going, you're going to give up a coach that's only lost.
Well, this
that,
is like John Cooper.
But it's
like
it, Cooper. But, it, but Michigan, it Michigan ends up being the pivotal game.
Yeah,
well, it's a season spoiler.
Yeah.
Always is,
always
and that's
is,
what hurts the most
that's
is
right.
that they walk
that's
out of
the last
regular
cut.
Play down to what ranked eighth or ninth, whatever it was.
Yeah. Should have had a bye,
yes.
and can't play for the Big 12
Big
playoff
10
or Big
right.
10 championship.
Yes.
So that game stings
that's
in
right.
so many different levels rather than just being a game.
Well, because part of winning the national championship, part of having a successful season at Ohio State is beating Michigan. And,
yeah.
And
it yeah, just
is. Sure.
I
yeah.
remember in 1996, whenever Tressel took over, I forget when it was, I went over to the I guess it was the site of the original Ohio State game. Over there's a giant eagle there now in German Village.
Oh.
And
oh yeah, right.
Yeah,
yeah.
Tressel was there making a speech. He had just been hired as coach. And
mm-hmm.
ironically, I went to the College of Worcester, and ironically, the first I think Ohio State played at that site, the College of Worcester, who beat Ohio State
mm-hmm.
back
wow.
in the day,
mm-hmm.
however, whenever that was.
Wow.
And the college, you know, the geeky academic from Worcester comes in with a bunch of jokes about the score. So it's like blank to the blank power is blank. You know, it's sort of
oh,
funny. He was
wow.
funny. It was a good speech. Tressel gets up there and all he does is, I think his first remark was a date. or a number of days, like blank, blank, blank days until we play Michigan. And the crowd went freaking crazy. And this is on the heels of Cooper, who lost that damn game time and time again.
Who had, I think Cooper's percentage.
Great winning record.
Yeah, it was off the hook, but he couldn't beat Michigan.
Couldn't beat Michigan.
It's the same.
Never understood it.
Yeah.
Right. Anyway.
He said it's just another game. And I think he actually
said
that. He
actually did say something like that. And it's like, listen.
This isn't.
Norm, before you leave, there was a scuffle, and only one cop got stretchered.
Just one?
Yeah, he got stretchered away, but he was fine. Okay. Yeah, he was fine.
Was it pepper spray that took him down?
It says a head injury.
Ooh.
So I should have had a helmet on, but I mean.
Ouch.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks. Okay.
That was Troy, everybody.
Yeah, we got Troy at the command center.
Yeah. Wow. Doing the fact checking. I love it. Thank you, sir.
I got one more before you leave, I looked up earlier. DeWine, he's worth a humble $16 million for you, Steve.
$16 million. So I wonder how he made $16 million. This is always my question about politicians. How did you make what are you worth and how did you make your money?
You come in, you leave richer than you came in.
That's, how does that happen? Well,
more
that
times than not.
What's the governor's salary?
Yeah, right.
Six figures in some
fashion,
I think.
And he was a U.S.
Less
senator.
Less than $200,000, I would think.
He was lieutenant governor, U.S. senator, governor.
And he's worth $16 million. Now, he may have inherited. I think that the Wine family's got a long long history.
That's true. $168,000 a year.
Right, and he's worth $16 million.
Unreal.
Yeah, he's got great investment advice, doesn't he?
Well, Fran and I are good savers.
We've done it before. We have the tools to do it again. We can shut you down. We can shut you down, and we're not going to let you work, and you're not going to get paid. But we've done it before.
I'm gonna talk about this bill a little bit. This bill that kind of failed. So originally there was a bill in the Ohio House and Senate that was going to give physicians the right to prescribe off schedule or whatever they call that when you
drug for other purposes.
Purposes. And for example, like ivermectin during COVID.
That wasn't quite. I mean, people have been using ivermectin for that for a long time. But anyway, I got you. Yeah, you're right.
So I
gabapentin is one of those.
So it was going to give doctors the ability to actually practice the art of medicine,
creative to solve medical problems,
and the patient had to be informed and had to agree to it if it was off label, but they watered it down and put the power back into the pharmacists. The pharmacists now have approval or denial capability as a result of this bill. They can continue to tell doctors, no, I'm not going to fill that.
I'm hoping this is something that, like, RFK is not. I'm not as huge a fan.
Yeah,
generally speaking.
Yeah,
but I like a lot of what he has to say.
Yeah,
you know, it's like I think he goes to say that no vaccinations are good is an overstatement. To say all vaccinations are good is an overstatement.
Sure.
But I'm hoping this is one of the things that he comes in and starts unraveling, because the power of the big pharmacy industry in our country to control healthcare.
Right.
And once we centralized healthcare with the federal government, we're basically giving the government power over our doctors' decisions.
Right.
We had to get a doc in here. Somebody who we might even have to blur their face out and change their voice.
Yeah.
Get a real insight into it. Or find somebody who's retired.
Right. And that whole scenario, to me, I'm playing this out going, okay, so docs are going to find pharmacists that are on their side.
Mm.
Or
pharmacy shopping.
Or you start to see compounding pharmacies come back.
Well,
in a rush that all of a sudden these docs are sending patients to compounding.
Yeah.
Well, and they're outside the scope.
I have worked
on. You get
on
these alliances that you think you're solving something, but it's.
There's always another problem, right?
Yeah.
So the more regulation you have, the more people try to avoid it or get creative and work around it. Then you have other problems that creates other stuff. And that's what you're talking about.
Yeah.
It's like the unintended.
And probably it's going to come from scenarios that it's a cancer patient. And this drug would really work better than the other. And this doc wants to do the best that they can for this cancer patient.
And they can't because
the pharmacist won't do it.
Yeah.
And
there's way too much money behind.
You
the
know,
that's
probably going to be. It's not the nefarious stuff. It's that doctor who really gives a damn and wants to help that patient.
Right. And I have worked on cases for pharmaceutical sales folks who have gone out and legitimately started out in the compounding world, mm-hmm. where they're making compounds to do these various things, these creams or whatever it would be.
Yeah.
And they may have a valid purpose, but quickly it gets corrupt because they start selling the docs, they start giving the docs stuff, they start going in, and eventually the docs were getting a percentage of what the pharmacy was, what the salesmen were making.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, it was crazy.
Yeah, that's crooked.
It was totally crooked, and and nobody even realized it. But it's a consequence of what you're talking about. I think.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, and this was really big in the pain killing. You know, the
codeine.
Pain management. You're talking about the pain management.
Pain management.
You're talking about the opioids.
Opioids. Thank you.
I mean, the docs were really cashing in there if they overprescribed it, and many did.
And they, of course they did, because they were getting paid in the backside.
They were getting paid on the backside. Some more bills. So Matt Huffman has this bill, speaking of drugs, to prohibit Delta 8 and other derivatives from hemp. And he also wants to start putting the brakes on recreational marijuana sales in general, but it's been 200.
Yeah, that train left the station.
$200 million.
That's what I saw too. It's like, what is he doing?
$200 million in Ohio so far in sales,
and that's awesome. Less than 1 year.
Well, look, Delta 8, like these derivatives, like Delta 8 and Delta whatever. I mean, they're having defended dope cases for a number of years. The law has to define the substance. And that's usually, a lot of that's done sometimes in like very chemical terms.
Mm-hmm.
And so you look it up and you see, and sometimes like with Delta 7, Delta 8, it wasn't THC as defined by the law, but people got high from it. It wasn't like a CBD where you got, where there's no sort of psychotropic effect. You actually got high from that stuff, but it wasn't prohibited by law. So it sort of fits.
Yeah.
As soon as you made CBDs lawful, it fit under a different hat. Mm-hmm. So I don't know what this bill is targeted at doing, but maybe it's targeted at redefining what is regulated and what's not regulated. That'd be one thing. But if he thinks that he's going to stop recreational weed at this point, you missed the boat.
Constitutional amendment.
Right. You missed the boat.
I mean,
other than it's him just trying to refine, constrain it. That's what I kind of got from it. It's like, passed it, but I'm going to make it, I'm going to squeeze the life out of it it's worthless. That's kind of what I see for this happening, because he's pissed that it passed.
And I'm hot and cold on this. Look, Rick, look, we sell alcohol. Alcohol is one of the most dangerous drugs on the planet, and we sell it ubiquitously. Right. Yeah. And not only that, we encourage everybody to use it.
Yeah.
I'm not, and I think those on the other hand who say marijuana, oh, it's great, it does blah, blah, blah. No, it's got a lot of bad stuff too. So proceed with caution.
You said before, Steve, that because of the way marijuana is classified in federal law, that very little really good research has ever really been done on it.
Well, it's been long-term. The research has been restricted. There's been some exceptions for hemp research, and I know when I looked into this a few years ago with hemp and CBDs, the federal government was starting to relax and give some permits, but it was required a permit system to go get research and be able to at least explore what it is. I don't think we've yet scratched the surface of the positives and negatives of marijuana.
It's still a Schedule 1?
It's still a Schedule 1. Yeah, it's still controlled. And I think the federal government, sooner or later, will change that.
Oh,
they're going to have to.
Yeah, so universities can study this. Yeah.
Because the potential of making money on this and saving lives is there.
Is there, right. There, look,
it's a prescriptive drug that can do...
It needs to be researched.
No less harmful than opioids that we're prescribing with regularity, right? I mean...
Yeah,
alcohol's never been prescriptive, and we're allowing that out there.
Some
of
the Canadian studies, because they...
My advice to you, start drinking heavily.
Right.
like some of the Canadian studies, you know, and I don't know how to judge whether they're good or bad studies, but that... There have been some Canadian studies that indicated that long-term heavy marijuana use can really have some bad effects.
But you know
what? I don't know if it's good or garbage.
So can alcohol. Anything. Anything heavy and long has a wreck on your body.
But it's just, I would like to know the
truth. Exactly.
Is it true?
Yeah, what's really going on?
Yeah, what's going on?
What's really going on?
Oh, yeah, for sure. No, I totally agree with you.
What's the difference between smoking it, taking a pill, taking a vape, we have not really explored all this, and it just gets sort of slapped into this.
Other than it's out in the wild. We studied in the wild.
Right. So we've got like dudes in college saying, man, this is the best strain of weed I've ever had. This makes me sleep, or this keeps me awake, or this one helps my ADHD. But these are anecdotal stoner dudes.
Yes.
Right?
Well, and veterans who say that, you know, they've got kind of,
PTSD. Look,
I can't say it doesn't help them.
Yeah, me neither.
Look.
I don't know.
Yeah. you know, alcohol.
And I'd like to know.
Alcohol's an awesome drug. Marijuana is an awesome drug recreationally. Go enjoy, I suppose, but do it with caution.
Well, revisiting a couple of other bills real quickly here. So we talked a little bit about, you know, okay, a bill passed requiring all school districts to have a policy. The policy could deny religious education off time, off campus, paid for completely by non-public funds. They had to make a policy one way or the other. Well, not happy with that, people have gone back to the legislature, and now there's a bill to compel every school district to allow it when it meets those criteria, being paid for not by the school district, even the transportation, and it has to be during a non-class time and all this other stuff. And Brett has made really good points on this over time, over this past year, about the disruptive effects. And I cannot argue with that, that the idea of taking kids, so they're delivered to a grade school, and then you come in at, say, 11 o'clock in the morning and bus them to a church and then return them at 1 in the afternoon, it does seem incredibly disruptive to me.
Or I'll give you another example. Let's say you're an elementary school in Marysville, and there's another school in Marysville called the Satanic Temple.
Oh, gosh, I saw this.
Oh, man.
They're allowing kids to go to Satanic Temple.
Yeah.
In parents, Marysville.
Yeah. Wow.
This is where all of a sudden we've hit the gas.
Yeah.
And now it's 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And we're putting legislation to allow, this is allowed.
Yeah.
Yeah.
This is allowed.
Yep,
so folks, think about what you are asking your legislators to put through.
Yep.
Yeah.
Disruptive day and Satanic Temple.
Yeah, or anything.
Anything. Yeah, this is just an example that is real.
It could be the worship of a rock. I mean, any kind
Whatever.
Of religion.
I have said this.
I just don't. It doesn't need to happen.
I've said this repeatedly. My kids are out of the system.
Yeah.
But if I were just starting, they would not be in the system. I would either be homeschooling or I would carefully choose a private school.
Yes.
I would not.
And Brett's made that point. If you want your kids to get a religious education, there's a lot of religious schools.
You've got the vouchers now to do it.
Yeah, go do it.
Yeah, I would not engage in any of this nonsense on any level, whether it's from the political woke ideology all the way to this kind of crap.
I'm not against religious education. I'm pro-religious, but taking this disruptive thing, I have to agree with Brett.
Yeah.
You know, if you create a vacuum, then something's going to fill it.
Yeah.
And this is the crap you get.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and to my point too, when Norm and I were talking about this a couple weeks ago, I mean, teachers already have a hard enough time as it is.
Yeah.
And you're disrupting the day once, maybe twice. They have a hell of a time teaching these kids.
Getting these
kids.
It's
tough. It's tough right now.
Well,
you don't need this stuff.
They just went off and had a Bible reading or something, and they're really happy, and they're all buzzed, and maybe they had lunch. They're all full of high C sugar drink. And then you drop them back in the classroom, and the teacher's got to get...
Set the table again, basically.
Yeah.
I
think it's too much.
Yeah. Right.
The final thing I have in the legislature is there is a bill to require parental notice of sex ed curriculum. You know, and I think parents definitely should know what's in the curriculum. I don't have any problem with this.
All right, so hold on a second, though. I don't have a problem with it in theory either, but it's one of those things I question why we need it. Like, if you're a parent at home.
Because it's being hidden.
And well, there we go. So it's either being hidden or it's not being hidden. So you could just say.
People have an agenda
there,
at the
school. There should never be any hidden educational curriculum at any public school.
Right.
And we already have those rules, yet here we need this. Right. It's so insane. Like, I knew what my kids were learning about sex education because I was teaching it.
This is following what
the best I could
DeSantis
as an inexperienced first-time parent.
Well, this legislation is modeled after what DeSantis did in Florida, and where the gay community called it a "don't say gay" thing.
That's
and
right. It wasn't.
And he's
that.
Like, it's not that.
It's not that. Right. Mm-hmm. It's just don't. You're not going to indoctrinate my kids in third grade.
Right.
Right.
So, and I want to know what you're teaching them. That's all.
Yeah. I'm not criticizing the purpose of the bill. I'm criticizing the fact that we need it. It's insane to me.
Yeah.
Well, like you said, this is where we are in our society. Things the founders never would have contemplated.
We need this kind of government interaction. It's only because we've had bad government intervention already that we need more government intervention to fix it. This is like the It's an impossible problem.
Can you imagine talking to Ben Franklin? Hearing, hey, Ben, someday our schools are going to be talking about men on men sex.
He'd be like, public schools?
What?
Well, and it's not like it didn't exist in Ben Franklin's day.
But teaching it.
Yeah, exactly.
Encouraging it.
Yeah.
And you know what? We're gonna encourage your kid to change his gender.
Yeah. Well, and to me, it sounds as though this situation, too, is whoever can yell the loudest. So out of it, let's say it's a whole grade of parents. Who's clanging the bell the loudest about this problem?
Yeah.
Is it a majority? Is it a minority? You never really hear.
Well, we have.
I don't know.
It's
to that point, though, too. It's like, why are we even talking?
We have over 800 school boards in Ohio, and all it takes is one or two to do something really bizarre, and then somebody wants to pass a law. Yeah. So your point is very well.
And we go to a national scale. So what I'm hearing, correct me if I'm wrong, is that Trump wants to eliminate the DOE, Department of Education.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I heard an analysis going, if that goes away, think of all the millions of dollars that go back to the state.
Yeah. So me too.
It's millions in the three digits.
We don't need a federal.
But I don't know what the DOE does. So I can't go one way or the other.
Curriculum.
Is it good or bad? I don't know.
Either through direct or power or through conditional spending.
But I'm thinking, okay, that's an interesting spin on that going. Yeah. If it's not.
We didn't always have it. What's
didn't always have
I
it.
Have to look that up.
And if that money circles back to the states, that's not a bad thing either.
The only other department I can think of that was eliminated, like in the last 50 years, was the Interstate Commerce Commission. That was gotten rid of because we deregulated trucking.
Oh, okay.
We didn't need to you didn't have to write to the federal government, I want to run my truck from Philadelphia to Atlanta. And then they would approve it back in D.C. It's like, what the hell kind of
stuff? Really?
Money grab is what that is.
Jeez.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Wow.
All right. Yeah. So we got to shift gear. We got two more segments
before
left.
Before you switch here, Steve, sorry. Department of Education came around in 1980. And then for your money question, it's
under Carter. Jimmy
only
Carter.
40 years old. Okay.
It's $88 billion. I don't know how that gets distributed up, but I feel like someone would come back to the States.
Yeah.
Or at least to me, my taxpayer pocket.
Only the 80s. Okay. But, that's interesting.
All right. And Justice for All. We got a couple segments left. And Justice for All, we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about two big cases going on. One is the Penny case. Norm, you predicted an acquittal. Yeah. I predicted a hung jury. We were both right.
Yeah. Because there were two charges.
There were two charges, a hung jury on one and an acquittal on the other.
Right.
There's been, and at the same time this is going on. So here's the, I always like to draw these sort of parallels that maybe exist, maybe they don't. But at the same time, we've got this United Healthcare executive essentially assassinated with a premeditated killing.
Unreal.
All right. The same people who are coming out in support, and I say support because that's what this is, of assassinating a CEO of a healthcare company.
It's unreal.
Are criticizing the verdict in the Penny case.
Yeah.
Like how do we square this? So
right.
We've got a guy who the worst case scenario for the Penny case is he just went too far.
Yeah.
You know, that's the worst case scenario. Right. Now the jury disagreed. They said he acted reasonably within the bounds of self-defense. Right. But like the only argument against Penny is that, all right, you probably should have stopped sooner. You didn't need to go this far, and you made a mistake.
Yeah.
But everybody still should agree and would agree that he was trying to protect everybody else on that train.
His intentions.
His intentions were not to, he did not set out to kill somebody.
Right.
He did not set out that day to kill somebody.
Right.
Who's this other, Luigi? What's his name?
Luigi Mangione or something like that?
Yeah, Mangione, like the trumpeter guy.
Yeah.
He not only set out to kill somebody, he carefully and craftily planned to kill somebody.
Wrote a manifesto.
This is the worst kind of murder we have.
Yeah. Why do people write these manifestos?
Because they're lunatics.
I don't understand, because it's just the game plan. They're going to jail with a manifesto.
It reflects the self-righteous ideology upon which they rely.
Well, his hero is Ted Kaczynski, the Unabomber.
Right. These are lunatics.
He modeled his manifesto.
This is a murderer.
After that.
That's amazing.
This is the kind of murder that in law school. So in law school, we learn murder is a taking one human life of another with malice aforethought in the absence of mitigation, justification, or excuse. That's the common law definition of murder.
And this is the worst kind.
The worst kind of murder is lying in wait. In other words, a careful, crafty plan to kill somebody in advance.
In the back.
And that's what he did.
Yeah.
This is the worst kind of murder.
The worst kind.
Now, I bring the common law definition up because it is premised upon this idea of natural law. This is like Western law. Western civilization is premised upon this notion of essentially Judeo-Christian values.
Yeah.
That even beyond that, if you want to go back to sort of Greco-Roman values.
Thou shalt not kill.
Right. So this idea that you can't do this, that you can't kill in this scenario, is so deeply ingrained in our philosophy.
Right.
Yet, we're in a societal position now where people think it's okay.
Yeah.
It is astounding to me. It reflects an absolute rejection of all morality. I mean, we've seen this before, and it comes in the form of like Stalin.
Yeah.
Right? So the ends justify the means. That's what this is. We can kill somebody in cold blood and lying in wait with careful, calculated planning because, you know, we think healthcare is bad.
Well, and it probably wasn't as in open, but when the shot was taken at Trump, you know, people
same
are
thing.
Going,
same thing.
Which
same
is
thing.
So sick.
And there were plenty of people who didn't open. And a lot of tweets were deleted quickly during those days.
Yes, you're right.
And, a plug for you, if you really want to break down of that Daniel Penny charge dismissal.
We got
Lawyer Talk Off the Record coming up on Monday, December 16th. Catch that drop.
Yeah, Lawyer Talk Off the Record. That's my other show. So, folks, I actually am a lawyer, so I do some commentary on this kind of stuff. And we really did a detailed breakdown of what happened with the Penny case, why there was a hung jury, or what happened after there was a hung jury and the dismissal of the case and self-defense and how that all fits together. So check it out, Lawyer Talk Off the Record. If you want to get more on that, we'll drop it. We'll drop it there.
You know, guys, I was thinking of this Daniel Penny thing. Going back to that for just a second, and the Kyle Rittenhouse thing, and why, you know, so in one case, in the Penny case, they tried to racialize it, and I heard Tyrus, the comedian, say, who was, you know, professional WWE wrestler. And he said, well, you know, if Daniel Penny was really a racist, he would have just sat there with his arms folded and said, oh, cool, a black guy wanting to kill other black people on a transit car. I'll just sit back here as a racist and watch all this go down. But instead, he, a white guy, interceded to save black lives. I mean, it's preposterous.
And what was this? There's another kid. It was a black kid who I think stabbed somebody protecting people.
Yeah.
I can't remember the name of the case, but he got a pass and it was celebrated.
Yeah.
It was in New York. It was celebrated. He got a pass because he acted in self-defense. I'm not saying he didn't.
Right.
But who's the racist?
But I'm thinking of like the bodega guy who defended himself. He went to Rikers until people basically said to Bragg, this guy defended himself. It, like somebody came at him with a knife. And he got out his knife and he stabbed the guy, kind of like your.
Maybe that is the case. I don't know. But point is, Penny's not racist, but everybody looking at it is.
Clearly not. Yeah. He defended black lives from a black gang. It's ridiculous.
Let me say it this way: even if Penny were racist, or is racist, this crime doesn't reflect that.
No,
it doesn't.
Right.
Right.
He had clarity if he is a racist.
Right.
He had clarity. Yeah.
So I got to thinking about this whole thing. Why, you know, and I got to thinking, why are prosecutors, grand juries, why is the whole law enforcement system so obsessed with people acting in self-defense for themselves or for other people? What's that about? And I think what it's really about, it's not really racism. I think most of this is really about dissolving our individual agency to protect ourselves.
Well, you're exactly right.
They not want us to do that.
This is classic Marxism, attack from within, right?
That's
so that's what's happened. And
that's
look what's going on. So you've got this notion that we're going to defund the police, that all of this authoritative stuff is racist, it's bad, it's... we're going to get rid of it. And then crime goes rampant.
Yeah.
And so what do people do? They start defending themselves. They start defending others. They're not, Penny, as much training as he had as a Marine, I heard these commentators, well, he's a trained killer. It's he's a dude, right?
Right.
And so, but he's not, whether he's a trained killer or not, he's not trained law enforcement.
No.
And where was law enforcement? You would say, well, law enforcement can't always be there. But when they're never there and when there's no consequence, people know it. And this is coming, folks, from a criminal defense attorney. I've been fighting law enforcement and government my entire career, and I see the good and the bad of both. It is a necessary thing. We have to have law enforcement. We have to have order, and we have to have people like me defending those charged with crimes to challenge it and constantly keep people in check and constantly make it better. I've said for years, and this is controversial as it may be, I don't care if every cop out there is racist if they don't act on it.
Right.
I just need them to be police officers. Right. And when they act on it, by God, I'm going to be there to deal with it.
Right.
Because I'm there with boots on the ground defending people of all colors, of all stripes, right? It doesn't matter to me. All crimes. I take no moral high ground on
We are obsessed with thought crimes now. It's like, what do these people think? And it's like, I don't care what they think. I care what they do.
Yep. And look, the old school, the old guard judges, maybe they were racist, maybe they were not, but they were the first people to call out bad cops. And what's happened now is we're just getting rid of police officers. So now people are acting on their own. And we're getting what we get.
So, Steve, I've got a subject for you that I think you could do lawyer talk segments for the next year on this. So what is going on? Now, I don't know if you guys have caught this, but there is a constitutional amendment petition going around. The language was approved by Dave Yost, so it's a legitimate petition. They need 415,000 Ohio signatures to eliminate most qualified immunity for cops, firemen, teachers, prosecutors. So no longer when they're acting within the scope of their job would they be immune from civil lawsuits for the most part. This would blow it up wide open. And if there's a financial award given by the jury, it is the agency under this amendment. It's the agency that would pay, not the public employee. And man, the FOP's freaking out. Like the sheriffs are freaking out.
Who's starting that?
There is something called the Organization to Eliminate Qualified Immunity. Now, who's backing it and all that? We can get into that, but this is a real thing.
Yeah, that's a topic for another day. That's a deep dive.
That's a deep dive.
Because there are pros and cons to this.
And so if they get
if
they get the enough, if they get the sufficient signatures, 415,000 by the first week of July, it would go on the November 2025 ballot. So we got a long time to talk about.
Yeah, we'll do some exploration. I'm not ready to sort of kick that around yet. But generally speaking, there's going to be that is not a black and white. I don't mean that racially. I mean, that's not a this or that type equation. So as soon as you eliminate immunity for police officers, there's going to be an insurance industry that emerges to defend. You know, it's like there's a lot of ramifications to this.
And there's a chilling effect.
And then
that nobody goes into those professions because there is no immunity.
That's right.
Because they have to carry insurance.
On the other hand, the unions have a lot of power. Public unions have a lot of power. They have a lot of resources. So there's a lot of moving parts to this that it's going to require a lot of thought, not just my thought, but everybody's thought to really analyze this. This is the kind of issue where it's really easy to say, well, I support police, so I'm this way, right? I don't support police, so I'm that way.
Right, right.
But it's a deeper problem than It's a deeper problem than that. So look, on the one hand, I'm not necessarily adverse to getting rid of immunity for government officials. You know, it's like, on the other hand, I see the downsides of it.
Well, why is it all or nothing? Can we just start maybe chipping away?
Well, that's why it's called qualified immunity, because there is case law and constitutional things in Ohio's constitution now that address the situation. This would get rid of all the case law. It would get rid of the constitutional protections.
So before you just dismantle everything, we should probably take a deep dive into this.
That's what I'm saying, Steve. Man, this is fertile material for your podcast and for this.
We've got the good. What do we call it? The wonderfully outrageous. So we got something wonderful, something outrageous. Norm, you go first.
Well, my outrage. I love this. So this nominee for Secretary of Defense, Pete Hegseth, he claimed, I guess, in his CV that he was accepted into West Point, chose not to go. West Point, the U.S. Military Academy, put out a press release and said he was never accepted into West Point. And Pete, God bless him, he kept his acceptance letter from high school and rolled that baby out. And and he's like, who at West Point doesn't want me to be SecDef? Like what's going on? What's going on here? You know, what military academy would just out on its own, just of its own volition, just bubble up a denial that this guy was ever accepted? It's unbelievable.
Well, good for him. He had the paperwork still, but That's awesome. Just didn't put it on.
Awesome?
You know that. Thank goodness.
Yeah.
Thank goodness. Outrage. I go back to that Ohio elementary school for the Satanic Temple.
That is outrageous.
That's crazy. I don't. Not many stories really kind of bubbly burn me.
Right.
That one going. Damn, this went south so fast. Yeah,
so quick.
Yeah. Yeah. Anyway. Yeah.
Look, I find two things outrageous. And we've talked about both of them. The one is this support of an assassin.
Oh God.
For any reason. And I don't care what political bent you are. If you support murder or justify that in any way, shape, or form,
what is
you're
wrong
nuts.
With you?
Look, if they can't prove the case for one reason or another, like the guy maybe isn't the right guy or whatever it is,
right.
Fair enough. But that's not what's going on. People are, whether it's him or whether it's somebody else, they think it's, they're almost saying, well, see, this is what happens. You shouldn't, these people should be killed. I'm like, no, they shouldn't.
Steve, on social
somebody's
media.
Somebody's dad.
Yeah.
Is not having Christmas
two kids
with his
and a
kids.
Wife. Yeah.
Right.
Somebody's husband is not there.
For as evil as you think they are, you've eliminated something in that
right.
family.
You have taken.
Yeah.
You have taken that everything he's got and everything he's going to have, as Clint Eastwood says. You know, it's like,
I think he was 56 or I know he's fairly
that's
young.
Somebody's dad.
Yeah.
You know, that's somebody's husband. That's somebody who had an impact positively on others in the world. And you folks don't even know what that is because you don't care.
Now, Steve, on social media, it was, you know, which I don't know if you have any time for that, but I maintain a couple of websites, so I see it whether I want or not. And there was the same day this guy was killed. There were charts. People were putting up on social media charts showing United Healthcare was the leading denier of claims. And I'm like, well, what does that have to do?
Yeah.
With a cold-blooded murder.
A cold-blooded murder.
Like, and look, what are you talking
and if
about?
They're the, if they're the leading, see, this is the statistical BS that
exactly.
drives me bananas. How many of those claims should have been denied? Is anybody really asking that question?
Yeah, right.
Because their answer is none. They think it should just be all free.
Yes.
And look, fair enough. You don't kill the guy in charge to implement that policy. You go to the voting booth and vote. Or go explore some option that will work. Because
sue their asses off or something.
Well, he was going to a shareholder meeting, buy some of their stock, show up at a shareholder meeting, and pitch a bitch to him.
Like, it's not his fault that we have this screwed up healthcare system that's like half private, half government. Go back to your golden boy, Obama.
There you go.
Right?
Yeah.
That was supposed to fix everything that really fixed nothing.
He solved everything.
All right. All right. Yeah, exactly.
Well, my wonderful, if we're going to go around the horn, is the fall of Syria. I'll make this provisional. Assad, the butcher that he was, did protect some ethnic minorities in Syria, like the Kurds and the Christians and the Druze. Now that the Syria regime has fallen, and the Sunnis have taken over, I am concerned about the civil rights of obviously the minority population. So I provisionally will say it's a good thing. 54 years of dictatorship in Syria, all the wars between Israel and Syria, like from 1967 on, where Israel got the Golan Heights, for example. I'm glad that dictatorship is at an end, but it's provisional.
Yeah, right.
Let's hope it works out.
Yeah, exactly. I've got a couple of wonderfuls very quickly. During the first week of December, gun season opened up. The roads are safer. Nearly 27,000 deer on opening day were killed, harvested.
You're celebrating death.
Yes. And on the reverse side, I'm going to celebrate birth because the first Sunday opening of the Columbus Zoo lights, 25,000 people.
Wow.
Oh, wow. All right,
so traffic was a bear.
Yeah, traffic sucked.
Terrible. But I think it's great.
Yeah.
You know, the 27,000, roads are safer, families are fed.
Right.
If we have that many to harvest, that's perfect.
Fine. Yeah, there's plenty. I didn't get one, but I only got to hunt one day this year so far.
Okay.
I'll be out.
So I think it's great.
In a week or two.
Doesn't a lot of that venison go to homeless shelters?
I think it does.
There are organizations that you can take and donate it. I've done that.
It's not like they're shot and left to rot.
Hopefully not. Right.
you know, doubt it.
Ethical hunters.
You know, you may know some that.
Yeah, no, it happens.
You know, but it happens. But
it happens.
For the majority, there's always bad apples. Anyway.
Or you just can't deal. Whatever.
Oh, right. Yeah, true.
Look, I don't have much wonderful other than what you said. It's like what I love about this time of year is Christmas. I love Christmas.
Yeah.
I love the lights. I love all the music.
Yeah.
Cheesy as it is, I love turning on the radio stations and hearing the Christmas music. I like. Hearing it in the offices, seeing it in the streets, I love it. And I love the fact that people go out to the zoo lights, whether you believe in the reason for the season, as they say, or not. At least you're doing stuff. My kids are coming home, or my oldest is coming home from school.
That's awesome.
It's family time.
Yeah.
It's hunting time. Yeah. I get to spend some time in the field with my son. You know, this is the best time of year. It's the most wonderful time of the year.
And I
think next week we'll start talking about the best and worst again of Christmas.
I mean, the Christians
and movies and songs. We do it every year, but I love it.
I think the Christian churches generally say the most important Christian holiday is Easter, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But Christmas, you know, like there's no death involved.
Right.
You
know? Right.
I mean, it's truly, you can sort of just feel with your heart the joy, mm-hmm. you know, that, hey, you know, Christ is born, and here come the three wise men.
So. Yeah. I'm not one of those.
Okay, three wise guys.
Wise guys.
So look, this has been Common Sense Ohio Show.com this Friday the 13th, 2024, coming at you week in and week out. If you want to check the backlog, that's easy. You go to CommonSenseOhioShow.com, or you can check out the backlog wherever you get your podcasts. We are there. Norm's got us cooking on all the socials. We got reels, we got shorts, we got videos, we got audios.
Yeah.
We got it all.
Book reviews now.
We got guests. I've got a couple ideas coming.
We got Troy at the board over there.
We got Troy bringing in the facts. So things are happening as we approach the end of 2024. Not quite. We got a couple more to come at you with. But enjoy the season, folks. Spend some time with family, and we will see you next week right from the middle, at least until now.